webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment you saw yourself and God in you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for Thursday, the 8th of June, 2017, broadcasting from the home of redemptionism, where we love every train of thought visiting our station of freedom. We're coming to you from the Gospel Revolution studios right here in Eva, Alabama, thanks to the generosity of GR executive producers Jimmy and Carrie McCollum. But right now from Palm Beach Gardens in Florida, bringing you more consistent, persistent, repetitive CPR of the gospel is
Michael Williams,
the president and founder of the Gospel Revolution. Hey, Michael, how are you?
I'm having a good morning, a cloudy morning. It has been raining now for about 4 days in Florida. Very needed. We were smack in the middle of a drought, and looks like we have more rain coming this week.
Wonderful. Norval Hayes' orange pastures will be will be total blessing to him, and of course, all of the followers of Norval Hayes.
And the weeds will grow up even higher in that orange grove. But now there's a housing development there, actually. So,
oh, okay, Mike. This week, we heard from Sean Smith.
What does he have to say?
Dear Mike and Barris, my questions about using ecclesiastical verbiage. Now, right there, Sean, you're telling us you are not from Alabama. Please, please excuse me, but there are two $5 words right after each other. My questions about using ecclesiastical verbiage was tongue-in-cheek. I'm with you.
We take everything seriously around here, though.
Yes, and Sean, you're no exception. And frankly, as far as we're concerned, you are a very serious concern.
Yeah, we thought it was a full-on attack, not tongue-in-cheek.
So. I'm with you, and I support you regarding... Brackets, wait for it, brackets. Redeeming the English language by reclaiming the actual meanings. I'm proud of how y'all take a bunch of BS. That would be and bankrupt spirituality and return it with loving kindness. I give y'all BS because I love y'all and because I'm bored. Family, for those of you listening in England and Ireland and Kenya and Australia, y'all is actually a word. where we all come from. My family is very evangelical Southern Baptists. The it is strong in my family. Personally, I've tweaked my vocabulary to prevent getting into theological conflicts with my family, but that didn't work out well because now I have been shunned.
Mm. Wow.
You lucky little bugger. If I use English theological words, I get attacked. If I don't use those words, I still get attacked. I think monks have the right idea. Taking a vow of silence. Hey, did I ever tell you the monk joke, Mike?
No, but I got a feeling I'm going to hear it now.
I think so. I got the big red button, and I reckon you're going to hear it. This young fella goes into a monkery. I don't know if that's what you call them. I think it's what you call them, a monkery.
Monkdom.
Anyway, he goes into this monkery and joins up as a novice. And it's a vow that he has to take a vow of silence, and in 7 years he can speak once. And then 7 years later he can speak again, and 7 years later he can speak again. And that's it. And anyway, he signs a bit of paper, and 7 years later he comes up for his first opportunity to speak. And the father, do they call them father superiors, I think? I don't know what they are. Monkey superior? Anyway, the father superior says, In nomine Patris et Filii et Spiritus Sanctus. You have come, my son, for your 7-year freedom to speak. Choose very carefully what you shall say, for you shall not be able to speak for another 7 years. The young monk says, I hope you'll forgive me, but I think my health is failing due to the bad quality of the food. The Father Superior says, In nomine Patris et Filii, Spiritus Sanctus. The man goes back to his, I don't know, what do you call it? A room? A den?
His monk room.
His monk room. And so 7 years later, out he comes again. And the Father Superior says, In nomine Patris et Filii, et Spiritus Sancti, what would you have to say, my son? And make it worthwhile, because it will be another 7 years before you are able to express yourself again. And the monk says, I don't know if I'm out of place here, but I was wondering if I could have a new bed. Mine has lumps in it, and it's very difficult for me to rise up 4 times a night and feel fresh to pray. The Father Superior, I mean, he spews venom. And he says, are you out of your mind? I am banning you from this monkery. And the monk says, but why? And the Father Superior says, you have done nothing since you got here but complain. And that's my joke. And if you don't like it, you should at least pretend to, because...
Help us. Help us, Jesus.
All right. Young Sean, the fastest dung-slinging love monkey in the South, continues, English is my language and culture. Trying to fight my language and my culture is a fool's errand. So I acquiesce to the good fight of maintaining the gospel's real meaning. Like it or not, the words that English ecclesiasticism, see, you wrote that word, Sean, but I can actually say it. The words that English ecclesiasticism created are part of the English language and culture. I've made a foray into testing how de-churching my vocabulary would affect the gospel. I've replaced pretty much everything with different English words that have the same or similar meanings. Take love, for instance. If I try to specify a certain aspect of love, folks try to correct me with their opinions of what love is and should be. It's never ending. So I might as well be proud of my English language and culture. Well, actually, you don't have an English language. I mean, we gave you, Sean, we gave you a perfectly great language, and look what you all did with it. Anyway, but now for the question. Just one this time. That's as opposed to the 110 million that we got last time. What would you tell a gospel revolutionary who asked you, what can I do to reclaim and spread the gospel of grace to those in my circle of influence? Sean Smith, the fastest dung-slinging love monkey in the South.
Is a good question, Sean Smith. It has been asked many times over the years. You know, the only thing that we can do is say, follow your heart. Goodness gracious. We actually have people who invest in CDs. I remember we did a, just for this purpose, we did a CD called Gospel 101. We got those out to people in packets of 10, 20, 25, and many people bought them. So there's that method. And I have to tell you mine. I don't tell anybody anything. unless I get pressed into a question that needs to be answered, there's nobody around me that knows what I do, why I do it, at all. And you can always keep throwing spaghetti at the wall. There's that, you know, there's track passer routers. There's people that stand on street corners to say none of it is productive. Certainly would not be accurate. But then you've got to learn how to have a happy life all at the same time, rather than being ridiculed and insulted. because of what you're saying, just like what you've experienced with your own family. So it really is just your own comfort zone. What do you feel good with? What is, we all come with different abilities and inabilities.
Mm.
You know, I just related to Barris a wonderful experience that I had after going to a restaurant for many months here, that the server finally asked me, you know, Michael, tell me what you do or what you have done. I had no way out. So as it turned out, the person that was serving us was a Christian, very active in a local church. We didn't know that about him. And that turned into a really beautiful conversation there at the table. That resulted in a 2.5-hour meeting here at my breakfast table just on, I guess it was Saturday morning. And then another visit back there with Michael Blanch, who is visiting. And we sat at the table and got him into trouble for not servicing all of his tables very well because he wanted to hear more gospel. So whatever you feel that works for you, just stay open. I think that's more important to get to a point where your views would be valued and people would ask questions is kindness. Just be kind to people, you know. Just be kind. And, that's what sparked this with this young man, me and one of my friends that go there. She and I, visit this place occasionally. We both tip him, we tip him well, and, always are expressing our gratitude to him and thanking him. And, so he wanted to know what is it you're all about? And so there's a lot of ways, but let me reemphasize that again. Just be kind to people. Goodness gracious. We all have reasons to be ticked off because the service isn't the best. The person at the checkout lane is, you know, dilly-dallying and not getting you through the line as fast as you want to. But everybody needs a little bit of kindness, and it could lead to some openings to be able to share your most intimate understanding of the gospel.
Gospel Revolution. Now, Mike, I heard from somebody who I think is called Jim Zaletta, or should I say Giovanni Zaletta? I don't know. My friend Al from Gainesville, Georgia, he'd tell me how to pronounce that. But anyway, Jim says, "Hi, could you please send me the link for the guy talking about his painting on the intro of last week's podcast of June the 1st? Thanks, Jim. Mm. God bless. Jim." Now, he doesn't just say his name twice. He also invokes God's blessing on me. Mm-hmm. You notice you did not get this email. I got it. I live in God's blessings. I also live in Northern Alabama, which it must be God's blessings. That's all I can say. I said, "Hi, Jim. Thanks so much for emailing. This was an excerpt from a new show called This Is Us, and I found mm-hmm. quite a few videos for it on YouTube. Hope this helps." And I sent him the YouTube search bar. All the very best, Don Barris Bartlett.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, if the truth be told, this did not come from me, did it, Michael?
No, I was looking for something to enjoy on Netflix, and I saw someone interviewed, and I heard the name of this. I had never heard this series before, and it's just called This Is Us. I think I found it on Netflix, and there it's a series, and they've gone through their first season. And so I started watching it, and in one day I watched the entire season in one day.
You are a binge watcher.
Totally. I forgot about eating. I forgot about working out. I forgot about everything. And it was one right after the other. It's marvelous. It's about one of the best shows I've ever seen about the reality of the human condition and the reality of what kindness and going a little bit beyond your current situation can do. I mean, I have to tell you, everybody knows I'm a crier anyway, so I've ceased being ashamed of that. I do try not to cry so much anymore, but here at my house, honey, I just sat and cried all day. It was just, oh my gosh, so touching, so gospel-y, you know? And, it just takes things where other shows come to a conflict and the conflict leads to a murder, a slap down, and this show, it's just the opposite. The conflict leads to resolution. And never seen anything quite like it. And it is so powerful. It really can help. It really is it was very helpful to me. The way it's laid out is ingenious. You don't really figure out what all is going on until you get into about the third episode, but plenty good enough before you ever really know what's happening in the first three to really grab your attention. It really is beautiful.
Well, there you just heard of Jim from our Weeper in Chief, Michael Williams.
Gospel Revolution.
Mike, I got an email this week from Michael Turi, who is an official sponsor of the Gospel Revolution. Mm-hmm. And he said, Beres, what happened between Mike and Carlton Pearson?
Well, in 2003, I was at my home. I was living in Virginia at the time, and I got a phone call. It was from Carlton Pearson. Carlton came on and he began to tell me that he was listening to my series. He told me there were three ladies in his church that assaulted him every time after church. Have you listened to Mike Williams? Have you listened to Mike Williams? Have you listened to Mike Williams? Have you listened to Mike Williams?
How many people were in his church at this time?
Oh, there was several thousand. It was a large church there in Tulsa.
Uh-huh.
And he said that he then, they kept giving him tapes and giving him tapes and giving him tapes. And he said he actually started listening to them. And he said that it was a life-changing event for him to listen to these tapes. And like I said, that was in 2003. And then I explained to him what my experience had been and that I had just kind of fallen into obscurity. And Carlton's response to that was, well, Mike, your days of obscurity are over. And this felt like the big break where the gospel would be heard. Carlton invited me out. I spoke in his church.
We have records of you speaking in his church, uh-huh. Yes?
We do, yes. I taught there, and it created even more controversy. He had started sharing some of the gospel, and every time I taught, we had a long conversation about it. And I remember one of the sessions, I was there for a Sunday morning, and he was getting robed up. I mean, it literally took two people to robe him up because he was going to do communion. He had to have special robes to do that. And so I was sitting there in the office. He had his assistants getting his robes on and tassels and everything that he needed to have on. And he was telling me that they were going to do communion. And he said, he turned and looked at me just dead stop. And he says, we do still believe in communion, don't we? And I just smiled at him. I said, we can talk about that more later. And so from there, everything was a very positive experience. And everything that happened after that was very affirming. It was very positive. He was listening to my tapes quite incessantly and telling me, you know, what I was learning. Even when I taught the Sunday school classes, he would come and sit in on the Sunday school classes and would come out of them just telling me what all he had learned. And I remember him specifically telling me that I needed to write a book. And I said, yeah, I said, I realize I do. There's still some things though that I'm contemplating. He said, he says, let me tell you why you got to write a book. Cause if you don't, somebody will. And he said, you are the founder of this. You are the person who has brought this to light to the world. And he said, you need to be the one who takes credit for that. Now, I've never been standing there trying to make sure I get credit for these things. People know that.
But when it comes from somebody outside yourself.
Yeah, it's very nice to hear. So anyway, Carlton did proceed to write a book. I was in no position to start writing a book at that time. After that, the communication with Carlton just dropped off. There was no more, there just was no more communication. I tried going to a couple of meetings that he had just to be there to say hello, to, maintain contact, but it eventually stopped altogether. His book came out and he did acknowledge, me in the first edition. In the front part of the book, he didn't say he had, he said Mike Williams was the best teacher of the gospel he'd ever heard.
You reckon he was listening into Benny Hinn's phone calls?
I don't know.
Didn't Benny Hinn say that too?
Benny Hinn mentioned that being the best teacher he'd ever heard, but not particularly the gospel, because what Benny had heard would not have been distinguished from Christianity at the time. That was just on Soul and Spirit that Benny made that comment.
So in the first edition, Carlton Pearson acknowledges you.
Yes.
What happens next?
And of course it was just Mike Williams, which there's thousands of Mike Williams. It would have been nice of you to put, you know, Mike Williams of the Gospel Revolution, something that would have led people to, be able to make contact in some way, but there was none. And then, but since then, it's just been very strange.
There was a second edition?
Yes, there's been more come out. My understanding is that my credits in the credits are no longer there.
Oh, okay.
In fact, Carlton Pearson's personal assistant's name is Mike Williams now. And this person came along after I left. We had some friends in communication with him and talked about the influence that I had in Carlton's life about coming to understand something other than Christianity. And Mike Williams told them, Carlton's personal assistant said, yes, we have been hearing that he is saying that, and it is completely false. Carlton didn't learn anything from Mike Williams. You know, it's irrelevant to me, but, you know, when somebody asks a question, I've got to answer it honestly. Now here are the facts. Carlton's book, which is a selection of beliefs from several different already stated religions. He makes statements from Buddhism. So Carlton's book is made up of statements that come from other religions. And there's nothing new in it. It's just he's kind of patchworked together from here and from there and from something else.
But when Carlton Pearson writes a book, isn't it kind of like if President Jimmy Carter writes a book? I mean, you're going to sell a lot of them. You're going to make some money, aren't you?
Well, he did, and I think his publisher, first publisher was not Simon & Schuster, but after he published his first one, then Simon & Schuster did pick him up as a publisher. And but this has been it was just all of my relationships with these guys who had, as they stated, profound impacts from my teachings, all the way from the Copelands to, oh goodness, Andrew Womack. It just keeps going and going. Andrew pretty well resisted me from the beginning.
But you shared a platform with Carlton Pearson.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And I invited Carlton to come and speak at our first convention that we had in Houston. And we did a question and answer time, and he was asked about his understanding of Christ now involved in the redemption of the world. And one of his direct statements was, well, he said, if you're referring to that bloody mess that took place 2,000 years ago, he said that he felt that it was unnecessary.
So effectively, he said Jesus' death was unnecessary.
It was unnecessary, yes.
Fascinating.
And then the question came to me, and I very directly said that I don't concur with that. Then the question came about, do you call yourself a Christian? And Carlton said, yes, I do call myself a Christian. The question came to me then, Mike, do you call yourself a Christian? I said, no, I do not call myself a Christian. And I explained why. Carlton was asked to respond to that. And he says, well, I think I need to reconsider that. You know, looking back on it now and to hear what is said through Carlton's personal valet.
Named Michael Williams.
Yeah, named Michael Williams.
Really? Don't tell me that the Holy Spirit suddenly descended upon Carlton Pearson in such a way that he would have stuck a pin in a phone book somewhere in the United States where he'd found a person called, oh, geez.
Yeah. No, just a fluke.
Gospel Revolution.
Mike, this week I heard from Bernie Rouse. He says, question, why did Jesus choose 12 men to follow him around? Was it any of the following? He was lonely?
No.
Or to cook and do chores?
No.
So they could write epistles later?
No.
Or none of the above?
I think we just determined that.
Or what? This is the second time I asked this question. Bernie, I never got this the first time.
No, I've not seen it. If somehow we didn't get it, it was a fluke.
But tell me, Mike, why did Jesus choose 12 men?
Well, this was very symbolic, I think. I think that as through the 12 tribes of Israel, that he proved that they could not keep God's law. I think through the 12 disciples, being symbolic of those 12 possibly, he wanted to prove that they have no faith and they could not believe. So the success of the nation of Israel, as far as redemption is concerned, is found in their failure. Therefore, we may be correct in saying that the success of the disciples, as far as redemption is concerned, is found in their failure. They failed. And thank God they failed. They were supposed to fail. Their eyes were blinded. Their ears were stopped. They weren't supposed to understand. Why that carried over to after the resurrection, I don't know, but it sure seems to have carried over into after the resurrection for sure. Do you have any insight as to why there was 12?
Generally speaking, when we look at types and shadows in the Bible, 12 seems to speak of government.
Mm-hmm.
Years ago, I preached at a pastor's church, and his home address was 12 Government Street, Murray Bridge. And I'm going, really?
Must be God.
Yeah. Has to be God. When I was playing the piano in that church, I busted off one of the pedals of the piano. Had to be God, right? The whole of history is replete with those who thought they were right but got it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You can go all the way from Adam all the way through to Jesus and find that at work. Could 12 mean this is what conservative, acceptable belief is? But guess what? I got something else to throw at you. There is maybe another option. I'm gonna say, Bernie Rouse, and too long since we've heard from you, Bernie. It's a good thing to hear from you. Here's what we would like you to do for us. We would like you to tell us why you think it may have been symbolic. Because it seems to us that you do feel it. Michael, we heard from executive producer Randy Frank.
Okay. So why did we do that?
Well, he misspelled his name. He said he was Randy Frank. I just think he's Randy French, but...
He's incognito today.
Executive producer Randy French asked this. On the Mount of Transfiguration, Moses represents the law and Elijah represents prophecy. Well, I don't know if that's true or not. And his question is, why those two? Why not, for example, didn't Jesus... Now, I'm putting words in Randy's mouth now. Why didn't Jesus put Adam there and Jesus? Why did he put Moses and Elijah? Why those two?
Well, I think what Randy is referring to is a teaching that I did years ago where I inferred that, and these two men would represent the law and the prophets. One gave the law, one was the major prophet of the Old Covenant. I don't know that that's why they were called up, but in this situation. But there, you know, given the opportunity, he could have done about anything. I think for the disciples' sake, those standing around, I think what they needed to hear was from the law and the prophets. I don't think they needed to hear from Adam. I think they needed to hear from Moses and Elijah.
So here we have Jesus fulfilling the law and speaking to specifically Jewish people. So the things which were specifically Jewish were those which needed to be brought out. Okay.
Yeah. We can only assume because there is no answer to this question. We just know that it's recorded, and I don't have any other insight into that than other than it's there.
So, Randy Frank, there's your answer. Oh my gosh! Look who we heard from this week.
That is
Jumbo. Ba 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 ba. Ra ta 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 ta. It was no less. It was no less than Moses Gacho from Kenya. And he writes me, he says, "Hi, BB." He obviously has not got the news. "Kindly let Mike tackle this question." Oh, great. You haven't got the news, and now you want to put me out of the picture. Yeah, okay, Moses. Sure, sure. What was this milk and honey that Israelites were promised to find in Canaan? Thanks. Love you. Hey, listen, Moses, don't tell me you love me after you write me off and say, kindly let Mike tackle this question. Come on. Mike, what do you say?
Well, I don't think there's anything that the milk means, and I don't think there's anything that the honey means. I think it meant a land of abundance. You know, he could have said an abundance of cows and chickens, you know, or crops and good soil. But I think these two terms are symbolic of just fertile land, a land of plenty. Because if there's honey, there's bees. If there's bees, there's flowers. If there's flowers, there's vegetation. If there's milk, there's cows. If there's cows, there's grass. If there's grass, you can plant. I think it really is just a way in their time, in their own vernacular, to say a land of abundance. So I don't think that there is any mystery, kind of like, and I think maybe what Moses is referring to is that, see, Paul did use the term milk as a symbolic term when he was speaking in Hebrews about being on the milk of the word. Well, obviously, the word doesn't come in milk form, so it obviously was symbolic. And I think that's what Moses is transferring back to here, is that because it's a symbolism here, what was the symbolism there? And I don't think it was symbolic of anything other than a land of plenty. If somebody gets a deep revelation about this, we're sure open to it. But, as I read this, the thing that sprang to my heart was, why would Moses ask this question? And if any of us had to live under the conditions that they were living in, Kenya, Africa, in Nakuru, Kenya, in fact, we would possibly be looking for every possibility of an insight as to why we can't feed our kids, why is every endeavor unproductive, is there a land? Is there a land of what does milk and honey mean? Does this mean, folks, let me tell you, when you're living in the situations that they're having to deal with in extreme lack, and we're doing our best to give them support and aid and comfort in every way that we can, they're battling between staying in an apartment and going back to the village. Sometimes when a question comes up, you have to stop and realize where the person is and what may have generated the question. I don't know that that's what generated this question. I think with all of us living in America and them living there in Kenya, Moses has expressed a couple of times his willingness and desire to bring his family out of Kenya. Goodness, I am sure we could say this is the land of milk and honey, and he would, compared to where he is and his family, this certainly would fit that description also.
Gospel Revolution.
Now, Michael, Wayne Lease wrote me the other day, and he said, "Hello, Mr. Donald B. Bartlett."
He got the word, didn't he?
Apparently he did. He missed the Allen. See, I have two middle names. It's Donald Allen Beresford Bartlett. And Wayne Lease, I appreciate you appreciating me. He says, "I hope you are well and that you are letting the gospel work in you every day so you can be who you truly are. Free to," capital letters, "be." And then he sent me an article which was just excellent. We don't have to. It's got nothing to do with the gospel at this stage. But I just appreciate it. Wayne, thank you very much.
Nice to be thought of.
Always. Now, Tim Kraft is a fellow I follow on Facebook. And this might take us out today. I hope we have time for the letter of Dr. Jim, but frankly, I thought this was too good to pass up. "Before," he says, "before the crucifixion," Mark 14:25, "Jesus speaking says, 'Verily I say unto you, I will drink no more of the fruit of the vine until that day that I drink it new in the kingdom of God.' After the crucifixion," Acts 10:41, "Peter said, 'Jesus, revealed himself unto witnesses chosen before of God, even to us, who did eat and drink with him after he arose from the dead. Before the crucifixion, Luke 22:18 says, "For I say unto you, I will not drink of the fruit of the vine until the kingdom of God shall come." After the crucifixion, Luke 24:42, Jesus says unto them, "Have you here any meat?" And they gave him a piece of broiled fish and a honeycomb, and he took it, verse 43, and did eat before them. Matthew 5:18, "Till heaven and earth pass," the Greek word means to come forth or go away, depends on the context. This is fascinating, Mike. My paraphrase, that's the paraphrase of the writer here, is "till heaven, spirit and truth, and earth, human flesh, unite as one, / the kingdom within," each accepting or believing human heart by faith, "not one jot or tittle of the law shall pass," go away, "till all be fulfilled. Then, when heaven and earth are joined as one," capital letters, "by faith in the human heart, all truth is fulfilled and the law is no more." Interesting facts. Now, I don't know about you, Mike, but I read this and I thought, well, we eat the meat, spit out the bones, but this is, I mean, this is meat for the soul, isn't it?
Really is. All of the concepts and understanding of these verses, these are things that Christianity has a difficult time resolving because they're still waiting on a kingdom. But what the writer has done here has given us ample information to say that this has transpired. I also like his translation of these verses about heaven and earth passing away. I think it's excellent. Now, Barris, did we get this from a post or from an email?
No, we got this from a contact of mine on Facebook, which has, as far as I know, is not a member of the Gospel Revolution.
Well, I'd like to use this in any place where that our material shows up. I think this is a wonderful, and we can just take this clip and put it wherever we post things. This is worthy to be kept, and it is worthy to be read. So whether it's a gospel revolutionary or not, it makes no difference. This is really fantastic. If we could get permission from them to publish this in other forms, that I think that'd be great.
I love it. Now, at the end of the show, I'm going to be posting the audio from a video by Elizabeth Sartouris, "The Secret to Human Coexisting." I'm just going to put it up there and let you make your own mind up. By the way, if you don't listen through to the end of the show, you probably miss a whole bunch of fun. I put some Easter eggs up there, which are you won't find if you cut off at the wrong time in the show. Oh, God, they got all the good stuff was done now. Yeah, all they're going to do is talk about blah, blah, blah. Yeah, really? Well, you might need to – you might – what would you say about that, Mike?
Well, after we close down the program, a lot of times that's where Barris puts our deepest, darkest, dirtiest secrets. So, you know, you might want to hear.
You might want to. I'm going to be posting that.
And then again, you may not.
Yeah, really. You may not either. But I'm going to be posting Elizabeth's Secret to Human Coexisting at the end of the show. I just think it's that darn good. And don't be telling me what you'd like to hear unless you, well, I don't know, email us and tell us what you'd like to hear. Now, look.
Yeah. And do it in a form of a question, maybe.
Because questions are...
the lifeblood of the gospel revolution.
And remember, if you have any questions, feel free to record them on United States area code 234-564-0971. For outside of the US, the number is 123-456-4-0-9-7-1. We have never yet put out a series free to those who can't afford it or to every person in the ministry. We have never done it, but we're doing it now. Look, Predestined to Life, this is Mike Williams' new series from the recent Gospel Revolution End of Spring Conference in Calgary. In this series, Mike tackles the word predestination in the light of the gospel as opposed to traditional Christian theology. Find out who was predestined, when, and find out what roles faith and hope play in predestination, and whose faith and whose hope they were. This series is available for download now, gospelrevolution.com, $11.99. Now, come on. Don't tell me you can't afford it. We're going to, just don't tell me. I don't believe you. If you can buy a packet of cigarettes every couple of days, don't tell me you can't afford it.
But even if you say you can't, that's good enough. We'll still get it to you.
We won't make you prove it. Show us how many cigarettes you bought in the last 2 years and then how many divided by weeks. And we're not going to. You just tell us and you're going to get it for free. Hey, listen, if you're a Facebook follower and want to hang out with us, then hit the search bar in Facebook and search Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution. If you want your questions and remarks to not be seen by anyone outside a secret private group, go write in the Facebook search bar these words, Gospel Revolution Private Group, ask to join. This group also sprung out of the need to have a group where concepts of a slightly more controversial nature might be raised. Now, again, I'm going to say, until somebody else gives me something better, I'm going to keep talking about Michael Turi's statement, we don't give God glory. We are God's glory. Hey, fam.
Beautiful.
Hey, family, if you don't think you're God's glory, you keep believing whatever you've been taught to believe, but I'm going to tell you right now, do you know what? God says that you are the righteousness, his righteousness, in Christ. You know, when the angels say, what's your righteousness look like, God? You know what he points to? You.
Yeah. You know, Barris, that is to tell people how much we like that statement from Michael Turi. I was sharing earlier about the conversation that I had with the server, not only at the restaurant two times, but here at my home for 2.5 hours. Of all of the thousands and thousands of hours of teaching that I've done over the years, one of the things that I found most delightful in sharing with him was Michael Turi's comment that we do not give God glory, we are God's glory. And it sank into this young man's heart. So, again, Michael, thank you so much for this. It is just so beautiful. It is now a part of me, and I enjoy sharing this insight that you had. Sometimes it's just the way the words line up that make it. Right words spoken at a right time in a right way can change the planet.
If you want any of our hundreds of free products, go to gospelrevolution.com. where we have over 2,500 hours of free material, teachings, podcasts, they're all there. While in the store, you'll find the cheapest seminar teachings you're ever liable to find anywhere on the internet. If you need a fast injection of the gospel CPR,
consistent, persistent, and repetitive
joy of the gospel, then tune into Gospel Revolution Radio, playing 24/7. Thanks to Marcel Roos in the Netherlands. Forums, articles, seminars, radio, video, Facebook, podcasts. We've got it all just for you. www.gospelrevolution.com. And while you're up there, watch some of Jeff Robertson's videos. This week, he put out a video about, he titled it Cliff Notes on the Gospel of Grace and Peace. If you want to know how he does what he does, if you want to know why we do what we do, go watch the video. Really, go watch the video. Come on. If it's too hard, we'll try and send you. No, we won't. Just go watch it. Might guess what time it is.
Ding, 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 ding.
Yes, Mike, it is that time. It is time for the letter. And reconnecting with last week, we say, the days we live in are evil. If we embrace these types of compromising doctrines, we will not experience the true grace of God. We will neglect the world that desperately needs Jesus. I'm sorry, mate. I just got to interject here. You've had 2,000 bloody years. Sorry. Did I say that out loud? We will be powerless in the face of the coming onslaught. Golly, coming onslaught, huh? We will encourage believers into a life of compromise, and we will have no hope of a new life to offer the world. I'm sorry, Mike. I started to cry then.
And yeah, I think the life of compromise has already been very much embraced by the Christian community.
Well, I think you're right. Let's see what he says next. Truly, millions.
Truly.
Yeah, truly.
Starts out almost biblical here, right? Maybe it should have been verily, verily.
Verily, verily, millions of people have been worn out by religion. Really? I'm just past my prime here. I just think I'm going to interject whatever the heck I want, and I'll leave it for you to pick up the pieces. Is that okay, Mike?
No, but I'm sure that's what we'll do anyway.
Millions of people are being worn out by religion. Well, Dr. Jim Richards, why are you continuing the trend? But he says, replacing one extreme with another is not the solution. So, now you're saying that you are at one extreme. You're saying you are an extremist. Okay. Those who were held captive to religion are now being taken captive by these destructive errors. Now, remember, when you listened to last week, that these destructive errors include such things as not speaking in tongues, not winning the lost, a whole bunch of things that the writer's own church does not do.
Mm-hmm.
He says, like those who teach these errors. Who would that be, Michael?
Well,
he said last week that he knew these people personally.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we kind of know who that is. We've got him on videos calling me by name, so.
Oh, you, Michael Williams. Yes. Let me reread this. He says, like those who teach these errors, their codependent tendencies took them to the extreme of legalism, and now those same codependent tendencies, second time he said it, are taking them to extremes in compromise.
I wish I knew what he was trying to say.
I think he's saying you're codependent. Question is, not what he's saying. On what are you codependent?
I don't know. We would have to have a further explanation.
Don't you love this crap? I mean, if you want to tear someone down, just refer to them obliquely and then make any straw man argument, or just say whatever. Forget straw man argument. Forget logic altogether. Just say whatever the heck you want.
I think that the last thing in the world that anybody's ever had an assessment of me is the term insecure. I was just reading here. I think it's in the next line you haven't read yet, but.
You're insecure. I know. When I see insecure, I know insecure. You're damn insecure, mate.
I know I certainly can feel insecure, but I don't think that I ever project sometimes. Even when I do feel it, I don't think people can see it.
Okay. You've referred to it, so let me finish this out. While they talk of grace, they are not experiencing grace.
Let's stop right there.
I want to say something. Can I say something?
Go ahead.
How the hell do you know? How the hell do you know if I'm experiencing grace?
Yeah, and what is experiencing grace?
Really?
You know, here is the big fallacy about all of this. Grace is not an experience. Grace is a means of life. It is the source of life itself in Christ. It's not a, you know, I got up this morning and God's grace, you know, just like the statement, but for the grace of God, there go I. No, Paul taught grace as a state of being. Peter, James, and John taught on it as something you can grow in, like knowledge and things like that.
Or earn,
yes, that you could earn grace, which figured out that oxymoron. And this whole while talking of grace, they are not experiencing grace. Well, I know that I experience zero sensations of guiltiness between me and God. I experience it's not even experience is anymore. It is really a state of being. I think for every gospel revolutionary, we're not living from experience to experience as does the,
hold up. Experience to experience is what we have called parking space spirituality.
Yes.
But what you're saying is
that grace isn't something that just falls on you and suddenly you get a parking place, suddenly you didn't get in an accident, suddenly, you know, your problems are straightened out. Grace is a state of being in relationship to God. And this grace is not something that fluctuates. It has no variables from person to person. So here is the big deception in Christianity. What Jim would say is experiencing God's grace is not sinning. That is how you experience grace.
So I don't get that. Say it again so I understand it. You know, I'm just a small bear with a very little mind.
Experiencing grace is when you produce fruit, which we went into that, you shall know them by their fruits, and which Jesus wasn't even talking about anyone except the prophets who were prophesying things. So there's just wrapped up in this one sentence is a whole heap of misconceptions, and then trying to apply something that is applicable to daily life to it out of thin air, really, because what grace has become, grace is. It is like as Romans chapter 5 has given us. It says that what the law could not do, grace has done. For where sin abounded, grace did much more abound. All past tense. Grace did much more abound.
So all past tense. And every time that I've heard that preached, it was like present tense.
Oh, exactly.
Where sin abounds,
grace doth much more.
Dang. By how much can we be held ransom by misquoting?
Oh.
Golly.
Yeah, tell me about it. This has been the experience of my journey. It is simply reading. And you know, people say, well, you know, God gave you this revelation. And I don't believe that, folks. I think I just became willing to read what I was reading and accept what it said outside of the filters that I already had in place.
And the question for you, family, is, are you prepared to do the same? Will you think for yourselves?
Well, exactly. And if the gospel comes by divine revelation, then God is responsible here that not everybody has an understanding of grace. I didn't get this by divine revelation. I didn't get it in the twinkling of an eye. It didn't show up one day on my doorstep. This has been years of study and research and looking and questioning and being questioned. That has brought me to this place. And I think that's what people, Barris, even like yourself, that you have respected about this. When you heard that tape in Australia the very first time.
Did I tell you I just recently rediscovered that tape?
Oh, did you?
I did.
Oh, wow.
But sorry. Keep going.
And I think that's what captured you. It wasn't that I had a deep revelation and said, you know, Shanda, Shanda, Bobai, we, you know, thus saith the Lord. It was that I read something in context that you had never heard in context before.
Uh-huh.
Is that correct?
That's absolutely.
And do you remember what that comment was?
Yeah, it was. Study to show thyself approved of God.
Wow.
Yeah, you forgot that, didn't you?
I loved that one.
Mm-mm.
And in fact, I just shared that the other day.
And let me go on to the next sentence in the letter.
Go ahead.
If these people were experiencing grace, they would not continue in their insecurity. Let me tell you something, Michael. When I heard you speak that, study to show yourself as approved of God.
Yeah.
I have not felt insecure since.
Mm, wow.
Dr. James, Dr. Jimmy, I think you're talking to somebody else.
Yeah, this insecure, codependent, tendencies.
I'm just a country boy. Can you help me understand what the hell that means?
I wish I could, Don. I absolutely wish I could. I am clueless that Jim is correct about right now. I am clueless. But Jim has demonstrated here that he's clueless about this, because how do you make these statements, these presumptions, without, and it's such a vitally important, he says this is the most important thing that he's doing right now, is warning the world. And yes. So why not explain what this stuff is instead of just.
Well, it could be too hard. You see, if you have three doctorates from places you are too afraid to acknowledge, forgive me for being so blunt, but maybe you should be afraid of putting anything out there of any academic quality whatsoever. Okay, I'll shut up now, Mike.
You know, the thing that people have to understand is that Mike Williams Ministries, Mike Williams, the Gospel Revolution, and yes, you folks too, are under heavy accusation and criticism right now by virtually every Christian ministry in America.
Last week we spoke about Sid Roth.
Yes.
And the more I looked into it, the more I thought, oh my gosh. And then I started looking at Christian TV. Listen, if I backslide, it's going to be your fault, MW. And the more I looked at Christian TV, the more I thought, really?
Yeah.
You really want me to take you seriously?
Yeah, and you are going to hear constantly this huge warning against this gospel that we're teaching, that it is the most dangerous thing.
Dangerous.
To the body of Christ, to the planet, to sanity. It's like the it's the dregs of the earth.
So, Dr. James Richards, the three doctorate holder from who knows where, says, while they talk of grace, they are not experiencing grace. If they were, they would not continue in their insecurity, codependency, tendency to take God's word to extreme.
Well, you know, the thing that we really try to do here at the Gospel Revolution, I don't think that you can talk about God's word to extreme. Where else would you want to take God's word? I want to take it to its extreme. I mean, I want to believe it to its extreme. I don't want to be lukewarm. Is that what we're being appealed here to do, is to view this in lukewarm and get spewed out of God's mouth? The other thing that I have to comment about, I don't know of anything that has demonstrated more insecurity to me from any individual other than this letter. I mean, it is just completely rife with insecurity.
Let me tell you what 40 years of Christianity did for me, Michael. It left me wondering if I was in the perfect or the permissive will of God.
Oh, my, yeah.
Hey, Dr. Jimmy. You want to talk insecure? That is so freaking insecure.
Wasn't it, jeez, though?
And then he says, they think, meaning you and me, Jeff Robertson, Michael Blanch,
yeah,
they think that having this new information is freedom. Oh, you have no idea, do you? The very fact that you would write that sentence, Dr. James, tells me you have no idea. Comma. But they have actually become Gnostic in their approach to God. Gnostic.
Explain that to us, Paris.
Before the Catholic Church codified, creedified, and determined what was truth and what was not truth, there were multiple thousands of ideas of Christianity, one of which was Gnosticism, and within Gnosticism itself was maybe hundreds of ideas. Firstly, Dr. James, to what form of Gnosticism are you referring?
Yeah, you know, if his audience is needs to be warned about this doctrine, and they're completely, even pastors are falling for it, and everybody seems to not have any real information, why would you presuppose they would know what a Gnostic approach is?
You can't, but it becomes a very nice political speech. It becomes a very nice thing to throw into the conversation without ever explaining it.
And to label somebody so that you can dismiss
them. Exactly. Again, Dr. James Richards, you are using a straw man argument. If you don't want to explain what Gnosticism is, please don't have the presumption to use something which is above your intellect ability. Hey, little Jimmy Richards with the three doctorates from, I don't know, you continue to say belief in the heart is substituted with intellectualism and the abundance of quote-unquote deep revelations. Now, look, Dr. James, are you telling me you've never had a word of knowledge? Are you telling me you've never made a prophecy over someone? Are you telling me that you, in the Word of Faith movement, never, ever, ever had a deep revelation? Oh, please, come on. Belief in the heart is substituted with intellectualism. No. How about belief in the heart is substituted with freaking logic? Try logic. Try bloody logic.
Yeah. And you know, one thing that would be interesting if we could get some statement from Jim about what one of these deep revelations that have nothing to do with scripture that I teach, how could you get that deep?
How could he tell you that when he doesn't want to tell you that?
Well, and so far, you know, we've addressed everything he said and we've gone back to the scriptures to see what they actually say. But he's never once pointed out why what we're saying is untrue, other than verses out of context, which is the whole foundation of the gospel revolution. And I just, as I just said, I never have once gotten a revelation. This was not given to me in a dream. I didn't see it written on the wall. There wasn't a cloud came by. There wasn't a ripple in the water. The bomb that I drop is to read something in context. Just exactly what happened to you when you heard on a tape, not a deep revelation. You heard a sentence that was read for what it said. I didn't say, man, I got a revelation about what he's really saying here. I said, this is what this says. Isn't this amazing? Now, the deep revelation came before. We challenged the deep revelation with logic. Instead of studying to be approved, we found out that study should reveal to you that you are approved if you're studying anything at all. It's still one of the foundations of research in the gospel. If you're researching something and you find something that says anything other than you're approved, your research is misguided.
And let me remind you what we did last week. We talked about Romans 3, 23-24. I believe that's the reference. Read it all the way through. No punctuation. No breaks. Just read it. Read it for what it really says, in context. And you're going to find that you really are approved.
Yeah, exactly. It's a wonderful thing to find when you're studying. Well, it looks like we're going to have to leave the rest of this to another time. Goodness, we didn't get a whole lot of meaty stuff out of this portion of the letter because we're just down
How can you with just opinions?
There's nothing here. It's just innuendo and insult and discrediting, maligning. And I guess that's the deep revelation that Jim has gotten. It's about maligning somebody else's character, what's truly in their heart. Let me tell you something. If you think you know what somebody else thinks, please just park it and get out of the car and leave it. You don't know what somebody else thinks. Don't presume that you know what somebody else thinks. It gets everybody in trouble. Oh, I know what they're doing. I know what they're thinking. I know. You don't know. You don't know until you find out for sure. And this is what's happening in this letter is everybody's heart is being judged. Everybody's thoughts are being judged as though the writer of this letter knows everybody's mind and everybody's heart. I don't know Jim's mind. I don't know Jim's heart. We can only address the statements that he's making, and that's it.
And so it is that we must leave you, family and friends. Remember, religion wants to downsize your expectations, outsource your thinking, and repurpose your existence. God's eternal plan was just to enjoy the heck out of you and all of your uniqueness. The earliest church fathers who understood the gospel in their native language, that would be Greek, and with their native mindset, Greek, to which the original Greek text was aimed, were much closer to Jesus than the later Latinizers of Christianity. That is to say, the various Roman Catholic popes, Jerome, the translator of the Bible into Latin, along with Augustine, that dogma dictocrat, Remember, he's the one who told us that babies who were not baptized would go straight to hell. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. Go straight to hell, you little. The author, John Wesley Hansen, in 1899, published a book entitled Universalism, the Prevailing Doctrine of the Christian Church During Its First 500 Years. In it, he quotes the early church fathers in their own words, along with the statements of modern scholars, historians, and critics of all sides of opinion. You can pick up this little gem for the 99 cents Kindle edition, which you can read on your phone, tablet, or computer, and for as little as $8 for a hard copy on Amazon. Go get you one. You will never regret it. After reading it, you'll be an instant hit at church potluck dinners and sound both impressive as all get out. And, by the way, until they read it, no one will ever refute you. We run a value-for-value model here, and it costs us time, cash, and energy to research, produce, and maintain this free information. This value-for-value model is the only way we feel that we can present the gospel freely and unhindered. So, if you feel that you've received real value from this podcast, then I'm asking you to seriously consider donating towards it. Why don't you call area code 321-220-4373 and speak to Jeff about how you can participate. Or go to www.gospelrevolution.com and hit the donate link. And remember that cash is not the only way that you can support the gospel. Anything you can do to help the gospel can make all the difference for somebody else just like you, starting their own journey towards thinking for themselves. You have any questions? Feel free to record them on United States area code 234-564-0971. And if you're outside the US, try 1-234-564-0971. Perhaps you would like to invite Mike to your area. It's easier than you might think. Call our office on the number we just mentioned with details, when, where, and why. We will make that happen. So, eventually, at last, I am so tired. I've been up since 3 a.m. It's good night for myself, Beres Bartlett. That would be Donald Allen Beresford Bartlett. From the GR Studios right here in Eva, Alabama.
And it is good night from Michael Williams here in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. Folks, I was just reading ahead in the letter. We'll act next week. We've got a verse that Jim brings up. So let me give it to you so you can go be reading it and get ready for next week.
A verse.
There's a verse. It's John 7:17. So go ahead and read up ahead of us. I've not read what John 7:17 says. I see what Jim says it says, but it'd be nice to see what it says. So that's going to be a part of the show next week. So we've given you an assignment to study up, be ready, and see whether or not these things that you hear are true or not based on your own research of the verses that will be coming. Again, that's John chapter 7. Verse 17. We love you guys. Thank you so much for listening in. We'll be back again next week.
We hope you enjoyed today's podcast, but if you didn't, remember, just because you're offended doesn't mean you are right. So if you prefer learning how to think to being told what to think, then join us again next week, same time, same channel, where we're going to do the, well, same thing, probably all over again, only
probably better.
We've created a perfect storm of crises, and we've got to grow up. It's as simple as that. It's time for humans to reach the mature cooperative phase. Hello, I'm Elizabeth Satouris. I'm an evolution biologist and a futurist, a deep pastist in order to become a better futurist. I've always wanted to know, who are we humans? Where did we come from? Where are we headed? So from early on, I decided to study science because that was the authority on such things. I'm very interested in the ancient bacteria that had Earth to themselves for half of evolution, 2 billion years. The planet was occupied only by bacteria. A good place to study cells and societies is to look at our own bodies, which are made of up to 100 trillion cells, each of which is as complex as a large human city. And it's a marvelous society, your body, because no organ in it is trying to get another organ to be like it. Your liver isn't trying to get your heart to be another liver. We have a marvelous example in our own bodies of a highly evolved, decentralized, cooperative economy which communes as well as communicating. It uses direct transmission of information and it is completely transparent. The biggest discovery I ever made in evolution was to discover what I call the maturation cycle that permeates all of evolution, that any species has to go through a juvenile or youthful phase in which it has to acquire as much territory and resources as it can and multiply as fast as it can and elbow others out of the way and establish itself in its place on the planet. And eventually it gets too energy expensive to elbow the others out. The competition becomes very, very expensive. And there comes a point at which there seems to be a maturation process in which the species discovers the advantages of cooperation. That cooperation is much less energy consumptive, so that you have lots more energy to use in being creative in friendly ways with others. When they finally reach the mature phase, having solved both global hunger and global pollution, they start building cooperatives with a division of labor and every different kind of bacterium giving some of its DNA into a central library we call the nucleus, which then binds them to living forever in that cell. And so these cooperatives are actually new on the planet and have to go through their own maturation. And it takes another 1 billion years, after 2 billion years to reach the stage of those cooperatives, another 1 billion years they're going through their youthful phase, same kind of behavior, until they reach maturation and form multi-celled creatures. Those to me are the two biggest steps that ever happened in evolution, the formation of the nucleated cell and the formation of the multi-celled creatures from them. We, of course, are multi-celled creatures. We are now, as humans, going through our own juvenile phase into maturation. What's another interesting discovery for me, because I spent a lot of time working with indigenous people and looking into the history of humanity, is that tribal peoples actually formed cities long ago, maybe on the order of 10 to 6,000 years ago. They started forming cities, and we're only now really excavating those and finding that they don't have armaments buried there and that there were no defensive walls, that these were peaceful organizations. And I believe they were much like the nucleated cell that the ancient bacteria built. If you look from an airplane at cities by night or day, they look exactly like cells on a substrate. They're a much more natural formation than a nation, which is very arbitrarily drawn lines. So these early cities were cooperatives built by tribal peoples, and we're digging them up now in the Orkneys, in northern England, in the Amazon, in the Middle East, in Africa. They're showing up everywhere. And they then, if you think of that nucleated cell having to go now through its youthful phase, the cities had to do the same thing. And they went into empire building mode, which is juvenile phase. So first they were ruled by emperors, then we went into national empires, now we're in corporate empires. It's all the same process. And so we're now at the second time when this empire building phase has become too energy expensive. We've reached planetary limits in using up resources in all kinds of things, as we well know. We've created a perfect storm of crises, and we've got to grow up. It's as simple as that. It's time for humans to reach the mature cooperative phase. So we need not the hero's journey myth that brought us to where we are now, the adventure story, but a story of cooperation, a story of the ecstasy of forming real community by recognizing our oneness, by focusing on love rather than fear, by making Earth a sacred place again, where we live from its bounty, but gently, where we get rid of junk, where we make things only that are useful and beautiful, where we live in elegant simplicity. Find something that makes your heart sing, that you want to do. Are you a poet? Are you a gardener? Are you a technician? Whatever you want to do, find a way to do that that fits into a harmonious, loving, cooperative world.